Gurudev, life of Gurudev is very, very grand and very great. We are all proud of it. And all that was necessary for all the people in the world to go through the hardships and all the difficulties to realize the Supreme, he went through for all of us. It's surprising how a child of 9 years leaves his home for the Himalayas in search of God. Born and brought up in a good family, respectable family, disappears from home one evening and then just along the Ganges bank. Where going, what going, not much in the mind. What the intelligence of the child of 9 years? Walking all along the Ganges, reaching, it took 4 years to reach Uttarkashi. And the one objective in the mind was to find a good guru. That was it. And the criterion that was set by the child of 9 years about the guru was, there were three things: that he should be realized. Now, how the realization will be experienced? He decided that he should not be an angry man, at least. Loss of anger was one criterion. He should be a life celibate. Shouldn't be a married man. And the third criterion was that he will attract me. I would feel to surrender myself at his feet, that inner feeling. With these three criterions for a guru, Gurudev set out from his house at the age of 9, and where he was to go, not much known, but go to the Himalayas. This is at the age of about 13, he went to Uttarkashi and there surrendered to the... Now there are so many very interesting incidents that took on the way, that happened on the way, but we'll not go much in details about it. There was heard a very good famous saint, and in India when they, you know, those saints who wear the orange robe, they are called sannyasis. Sannyasis are such that they are not expected to touch fire, not expected to behave with fire, like that. They don't cook for themselves, it is others who feed them. Or they go for alms in the villages and come back. He was heard to be a famous saint. Then he went to him and made some disturbance on the door. And when he came, he asked him, "Can I have some fire?" And then the saint blew into anger. He said, "Fire? I'm a sannyasi and you don't know this. Small children leave home and come about and disturb us. How can a sannyasi have fire? You want fire from me?" And he blew into fire of anger. He quietly whispered a word. He said, "If it was not there, from where this came?" And retreated from there. He just let the saint know that he had quite a lot of fire in him. see the tricky boy of 9 or 6 going to test his guru because he thought the guru should be tested. And if he is an angry man, and if you say something against his order or something, and if he doesn't blow up then. And then suddenly he came down, immediately the fire extinguished, and then he said, oh, doesn't matter, this is the, these are the symptoms, these are not the symptoms, these are the characteristics of the mind, and the soul is ever the same, you don't bother, the mind is sometimes like this and sometimes like this. He said, yes, yes, sometimes it's burning and sometimes it's quiet. The saint was very much moved by the intelligence of the young boy, but he didn't appeal to him, he had his way ahead. Like that, many, many instances went on. At the age of about 13, he reached Uttarkashi and then surrendered to the feet of the master, Swami Krishnananda Saraswati, the saint. There were quite a good many disciples there, people doing practices of yoga and Hatha yoga and Raja yoga and Mantra yoga, so many people, disciples engaged in their own practices. And he happened to be the youngest. Now that looked to be very odd that the master gets a sort of attached to the youngest boy of about 13 or 14 years, where there were people of 30, 40, 50, 60 years of age living in the ashram for many, many years past. One night he said, the master said, that all right, tomorrow morning I will just find some faults with you in the presence of all the people and will ask you to get out of ashram or ask someone to take you 2 miles away in that cave. So you will not mind my sending you out of the ashram, that I have to do because you are the youngest and I can't put you on deep practices, whereas other people don't deserve such deep practices of yoga. So I'll do that like that. Next morning he came out and he said, oh, you boys, you making mischief in the ashram, get out from here. And, oh, you come on, you take him and put him there 2 miles there and that little. Send him off. He was instructed to come back once a week on Thursday and spend the night there and go on Friday again. In these ashrams, what happens? After all, it's human habitation. Always, because the masters are like the ocean, fully. The full pond, full of water. Now the water has no tendency to go out or remain there. They are just full like the ocean. Anyone who wants to take the water to their field, make the connection and take the water, it is ready to go. Not making the connection, the water is unable to flow. And having made the connection, it doesn't resist going, it goes. So those who communicate to the mind of the master naturally keep on deriving from all that is there in that cosmic mind. And those who are not able to make the connection with the master, naturally they lag behind in their efficiencies of attainment. So after about 2 or 3 years, one day the master said to that man, Yogananda was his name, quite quite an old disciple of his, Yogananda, I want to go in that area and spend some days in silence. You go to that brahmachari and ask him if there is some place there for me to come. And he was asked to ask him, the youngest brahmachari, to ask him and find out from him, because that territory belonged to him at that time. He went and asked him, oh, Gurudev wants to come here, and what place will be best for him? He has asked to find out from him. He said, I'm sorry, there is no place here for Gurudev. No more place is there for him. He couldn't bear this word from the brahmachari. And he said, this is what you have become here, living so far, and you have become so obstinate as to refuse the place to the master. And he said, now, Yoganandaji, you are my elder, and I worship you, and I have all admiration for you. You are a messenger at this time, brought a message from the master to me. Please give him in return what I am delivering to you, just as a messenger. Look to the, there is a great significance in it, later on it comes to be disclosed. But the sharpness of the mind of the youngest that baffled the mind of the oldest Yogananda. He came back and he said, Brahmachari seems to be very obstinate, and he has gone off his mind, and he said to me something which I can't repeat in front of you. Everybody became curious, what happened, he said, there is no place there, and I have seen with my eyes, there is that cave, and there is that cave, and there is that cave. Everybody in the ashram was simply against the brahmachari, and he said, no, he must be properly dealt with. We can't bear such an insult to our master. Next Thursday night he came, and people were sitting around the master, and when he came, he was thought to be a great culprit, having insulted the master. And he came and sat down as he used to sit in a very humble way, all apart from, at a distance from the master. Then someone asked the master, if some disciple insults the guru, what is the punishment for him? How can he be relieved of that sin? Because the punishment is always to relieve the man from his sin that he has committed. And there was great silence and hubbub. The master looked at the brahmachari and said, what have you to say? Probably these people have not understood the message that you sent to Yogananda. Tell them, what did you mean by that? He said, if I knew that I was sending the message to these people in the ashram, I would have sent the message in other words. I thought I was sending the message to the master. And if they want clarification, it's a simple thing. The day I entered this ashram, I had surrendered the whole of my being to the feet of my master, and every fiber, every atom of my body is now filled with the being of the master. No more there is any place which I could offer anymore. Had I known that the place would be demanded sometime to come, then I would have reserved some corner of my being. And there was that flash of enlightenment in the whole assembly of the ashram. Such a great fullness of surrender to the master. And this it was which made him so great in his achievement, that now the whole world is going to enjoy that glory. And this was the technique that was adopted, complete surrender to the feet of the master, and to such a great fullness that whatever be the question, whatever be the talk, but that state of surrender prevails. He said, the guru dwells not in the caves of the earth or stone, not in the houses of bricks and mortar. He dwells in the heart of the people. And there he is already dwelling in my heart. No more is any corner left vacant to be provided now at this demand. Such was the fullness. He remained with his master for about 12 or 13 years, and then went deep into the Himalayas, came out into the deep forests of central India, always away from the population, always away from the population. In such deep forests, Gurudev spent many, many years of his life, where even the sun rays wouldn't touch the ground, so thick foliage. And he was unknown to the people, but he was well marked in the destiny of India and in the inner vision of the good saints of India. This was the condition till the age of 71. From the age of 9 to the age of 71, this was the life of a recluse. Complete seclusion out of every contact of human being, and so many stories are told that in the central India in those days there were lots of small states. So mostly he used to live in the deep, dense forest, dividing the boundaries of the states, this side and that side. So when some farmer or some cowherd man would inform the people in the village, oh, that saint is there, and a very good saint, and so bright. And because the whole being, out of samadhi all the time, the whole being was simply shining with great light. And that couldn't be hidden. One who sees it tells to hundreds of others, and they go to see. By the time he is not found, the next day there gets deeper on the other side. Like that, the princes used to almost chase him just to have a glimpse of his darshan, just to have a look of him. In India, it's a great conception that if you happen to see a good saint, the sight of a good enlightened soul purifies the seer. Like that, he was living all the time. Now, there are the seats of Shankaracharya. There are four seats of Shankaracharya in India. Shankaracharya is the head of Hindu religion, as the Pope is of Catholicism. Shankaracharya is the head of Hindu religion. In Shankaracharya dissolve all the differences and dissensions of different sects and creeds of Hindu religion. That is a platform common to all. His philosophy is that of Vedanta philosophy. And this meditation is a direct way to experience what Vedanta philosophy teaches. The essence of Vedanta philosophy, I said the other day, is that there is one ultimate reality, transcendental absolute consciousness, that is all pervading. And all the forms and different spheres of phenomenal world are nothing but different degrees of manifestations of that unmanifested pure consciousness of absolute nature. And that is myself, and that is yourself, and that is all this unity in the field of all diversity. This is the principle of Vedanta, that all is bliss, including myself. Not that I am this here and all else is bliss. No, all else is bliss, including myself, everything. This is the principle of unity. And about the world, Vedanta says it is all only phenomenal. It appreciates, it accepts the validity of the three states of wakeful and dreaming and deep sleep, but it, all these relative states have come out of the absolute state of being. So, this is the philosophy of Shankaracharya. I need not go much into Shankaracharya. I'll speak some other time about Shankaracharya. About 2500 years ago, the first Shankaracharya established these four principal seats, one in the north, in Jyotirmath in the Himalayas, one in the south, in Sringeri Math near Mysore, one in the east, near... Puri, near Calcutta, Puri, and one in the west, near that west extreme end of India, near Dwarka, Sharda, seat. These are the four principal seats of Shankaracharya. The seat of the Shankaracharya of north, of the Himalayas, was vacant for 165 years. That was the time when Mohammedan reign was, rule was falling apart and Britishers were coming in and there was a chaos all the time, about 160. From now about 180 years ago. Like that, somehow the seat of Shankaracharya remained vacant, there was no occupant of that great throne of Shankaracharya. All the conscientious leaders of public life and good saints were concerned with this seat of Shankaracharya remaining vacant. They held national conferences to select some Shankaracharya. And on the higher circle of the saints, Gurudev was known. So they decided to approach him wherever he was. The story goes that it took him 20 years of persuasion to accept the seat of Shankaracharya. Because the life was so drawn out of the field of activity, complete, an ideal, most ideal life of a recluse, of a sannyasi. Eventually, after 20 years of persuasion, at the age of 71 years, in 1941, he was installed as a Shankaracharya. Now, Shankaracharya means a great institution in himself. Hundreds of people surround him and all this, a great commotion. His life had been of complete silence. Whatever it was, that was the time when he came to, when Shankaracharya used to come, they take him out on great processions with great, all big paraphernalia. In one of the processions I happened to see him, and when I saw him first time, I said, now fine, this is it. That was the flash to me, and then I surrendered myself. It took me about 2 years for a proper surrender, which could be said to be surrender, and then thereafter the life was a real blissful life. As a Shankaracharya, he was found to have the great intellect of the first Shankaracharya and the heart of Buddha, the lovable soft heart of Buddha and the great intellect of Shankara, and that was his personality. He wouldn't go much in details of the philosophical discussions, but what he spoke was simple truths of life. But very simple, so piercing, they went straight home to heart. People have been telling us, I said, there were, that those were the meetings in open air, all the time in open air, except in the rains. Open air meeting, we used to have 16, 20, 12, 8, big 12 mic to cover the range of about 50,000 people, 100,000 people like that, just for his evening discourses. And he would hardly speak 30 minutes, 40. 40 minutes was the maximum that he went sometimes. But every word that he spoke was so powerful, was so piercing, was so convincing. But people would see him and would be transformed to all good life. Whatever remained there, buried in the subconscious, will come out when they hear his words. The very great atheists have just been transformed, not by the logic, or not by the deep exposition of anything great which they did not know before, but the truth exposed in so simple words and in such great force of life force that they couldn't but only be transformed. The motor will pass from there and you'd be speaking. And if the car is not very fast, if the driver happens to hear some word, immediately he'll put up the brake and stop and listen. Can't pass on. He has to stop on this. Such charm was there in his words, and such great simplicity and depth of thought, and he charmed the child and the old all alike. It was a pin drop silence of 50,000, 100,000 people, just pin drop. Before him used to speak some big learned pandits, famous big learned pandits of northern India. They go with Shankaracharya all the time. That is customary. Some famous astrologers in his retinue, some big famous professors of Vedanta, of yoga, all these, they go along with him. So these big huge intellectual giants used to speak before him. Some would speak 1 hour, some would speak half an hour, like that. And there was a marked difference in what they spoke and what he spoke. And for initiations, it was an unprecedented gathering to take initiations from him. It was tremendous. Those who have seen those days have been so fortunate, and those who have seen me moving about in that atmosphere, they know how the grace of Gurudev has dawned, and how when they hear the stories in these parts, how it is happening, then they say, oh, it's no surprise he has received the grace of Gurudev. All but his grace and nothing else. Except his grace, I don't have anything. And God willing, the whole world is going to enjoy. So we are fortunate, and all of you are very fortunate to have His grace so far from India, and but the fortune is there. Only we have to share our fortune with all our fellow men, and we have to do our utmost what we can to bring this meditation to all the people in all the ways possible for every one of us. This, if I could have some real good cooperation of all the people who come in my contact, it would be something. The whole world will become so full with all sublime essence of human life. Humanity will be changed into divinity, just a direct. We have seen His life, so we know what a divine, what divine could be in man's life. Just fullness of divinity. That is all the strength that I have and that you should feel in yourself. Such great power, such great wisdom, such great bliss. That is something about Gurudev.